Hello, and thank you for joining the Walt Weekly Podcast. This is Walter Latham, Sr. I'm on with my co-host, Bridget Stokes, and Kina Parnam. And today we have a very special guest, Mr. Dante Tyler, a cyber hygienist. And this show is going to be about, you know, what can you do to prevent identity theft from being hacked? All right, so we want to discuss that. And first off, I want to talk a little bit about our guest, Mr. Dante Tyler. And he's a native of Prince George County. And he began his IT journey in 2014 after high school. He's a self-driven. He's motivated. He has a passion for cybersecurity. And that's what we need. He has over 9 years of experience. He has honed his skills in governance, risk and compliance, data privacy, and security awareness training. Dante founded OQPS Solutions in 2019, and it is a government contracting consulting agency. And they specialize in aligning clients' business objectives with IT strategies. Beyond IT, Dante is a published author, a seasoned traveler, exploring diverse cultures, and boasts an athletic background in basketball and boxing. He's a property owner, investor, and owner of NCRF. And I was asking what that acronym stands for momentarily. And a nonprofit. Dante embodies commitment to financial well-being and community service. Aspiring IT professionals and community influencers alike. For more information, we will get that from Dante in just a second. So, with that said, I wanted to turn it over to Dante. And Dante, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Walt. I'm excited to be here. Every time I hear the introduction, I always say, like, wow, I've been some places. I've done some things.
Yeah, you're still a young man, too, so you're still on the runway. You haven't taken off yet, and you already done so many things. Well, you're going to share that with our audience. You know, the objective here today, Dante, is, you know, we want to transfer some knowledge, provide knowledge to our audience as to how they can mitigate being hacked. All right, that's a big thing out there now, and Bridget knows because one of her sister's companies, not vendors, but one service supplier was hacked, and they were down, and they had to pay a ransom, and that apparently is going on. So, but let's get to that a little later. I just want you to talk about, you know, what you are, what you're doing. First off, I'd like to thank Lindsay Peel of Kingdom Vision Consulting for connecting us to Dante. And she's a very close friend of the show, and she was on a few weeks ago. All right. She's a financial consultant, and she specifically looks at microloans. So, I mean, y'all guys, Lindsay Peel, I want to thank her. Okay. All right. So, Dante, can you tell us about your journey into the field of cybersecurity and what initially sparked your interest in this area?
Again, thank you for bringing me on the show. And shout out to Lindsay for the connection. She is one of my near and dear personal and business friends. We have cultivated a good relationship, and I appreciate her for bringing my name up in rooms that I am not in. Right.
Yes.
Appreciate that. And, you know, you asked me, you know, how was I able to break into cybersecurity, and what initially sparked my interest? Well, unlike a lot of my peers, we didn't have computers when I was growing up. We just didn't. I think my grandmother may have been the first one to have a computer at her house. And when I got a chance to get on there, I was getting on early social media sites, Facebook and chat rooms and things of that sort, and playing computer games. My journey into tech, specifically cybersecurity, was me stumbling into it, actually. My cousin was a system administrator for a government contracting company and put me on to some things, you know, sat me down, had some conversations, and I found myself, you know, studying for a certification. And before you know it, I got the certification. And then, you know, I tell this story. One day I got a call to get a clearance, and that changed my life forever.
On that clearance, what is that for? Government work that you need a clearance?
Yes. A company contacted me and was able to do, because of the certification I had, they were able to sponsor me for a clearance to work, you know, classified material use doing IT. And okay. So that's how I got my start into the industry. And that was 9 years ago. Haven't looked back.
All righty. Well, I am so glad to have you, because we were looking for someone to speak to cybersecurity, and you're a cyber hygienist. Did you coin that term, cyber hygienist?
I cannot take credit for that, I do have a copyright on the book, so
okay.
I can say that, but the cyber hygienist is something that we work into get secure, but you can think of me as the, yes, the cyber hygienist.
Now, I had a person on to speak to AI a couple of months ago. I don't know if you got a chance to listen to that. And he's also a cybersecurity guy working for, he served the government, similar to what you, I guess, on a contract, or he actually worked for the government. And he was considered himself a threat hunter. All right. So what's the difference between a threat hunter and a cyber hygienist? They're basically the same, right?
I think I actually missed that interview. And now I got to go back and check that out, because I'm truly interested to learn more about AI because it's new. Right? And unlike a lot of other people, I'm not going to pretend that I'm an AI expert. Have I used it? Do I know some things about AI? Yes. But am I an expert? No. So I'm definitely going to go back and check out that interview. If he was a threat hunter, that's a specific niche area within cybersecurity, mm-hmm. Which means that he's on the offensive side of things. He's actively looking for, I would say, potential threats to a system. So that could consist of, you know, him maybe doing penetration testing, which is, think of a penetration test as you have a security gate, right? Think of physical security, and you're tasked with going and kicking different areas of the fence to see where it is weak, right? So they do that with software systems, call it penetration testing. He could also be a threat hunter that is, you get a call when something happens, and they need to understand what happened, and then they need to go get the person that did it.
Yeah, but, and that's the one that we did with Jeffrey Harris.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. The cyber hygienist is, you know, I wouldn't call myself a threat hunter. More of a, you should think of me as a cybersecurity subject matter expert that can come in and design or redesign your cybersecurity program holistically, right? That the guy that you're mentioning who's a threat hunter, you know, we call him a technical specialist, like he's an expert, right? But I was saying that the gentleman who's a threat hunter is a specialist. And the difference between me and him is, like I said, I help design or redesign programs to decrease the attack surface, right, of an organization. So he would kind of take the plan and implement the plan that I would give him.
So a threat hunter, would they be active prior to being hacked, or That's something that they do to as a mitigation, or that's after you've been hacked. Threat Hunter, could you explain to me a little bit where they come in? I know what you do, what you're doing. Well, I'm guessing now. Don't let me guess. But I'm trying to look at what you do as a cyber hygienist and what the Threat Hunter does. All right, you saying that you do everything and then you pass it off to this guy, right? To the Threat Hunter. Is that correct?
Yeah, in a way. So, basically, a cybersecurity program encapsulates business processes, right? You got business systems.
Okay.
You have laptops, printers, servers, things that make the business go most times, right? But those need to be protected, right? So you need to have a security architect, right? And this Threat Hunter that you're speaking of, he would fall under the lines of like a security engineer, right? Someone who's actually going to carry out the strategy that myself and maybe other cybersecurity managers have come together and developed a strategy to, like I said, reduce risk to acceptable levels for that program, right? That's what cybersecurity is all about. It's about risk. Right. What are we willing to accept? What aren't we willing to accept? What are we willing to mitigate?
All right. I am. One thing, Dante, let me let you know. OK, we're both IT project managers. That was my and that's Kino's out there now. She's still there. I used to work for Kino actually as a senior project manager. And she was a program manager in charge of projects. All right. So. Want to just throw that out there and let you know that, you know, we are kind of, I wouldn't say astute technical people. We're mostly business people. We come from the business side. Okay. So I just want to put that out there. So this is Kina Parnum, Warham, and this is Dante. Dante, Kina.
So Dante, what are some of the key skills and experiences you've gained over your 9 years in the cybersecurity industry?
That's a good question. I would say the top three skills that I've developed in my 9 years, not even just within cybersecurity, right? Because cyber is within IT. So, you know, it's its own niche area, but some key skills that I would develop that I've developed would definitely be communication. You know, you have to be able to traditionally in the tech space, people are not really extroverts. You know, they spend a lot of time at computers, if not all their time at computers, watching screens. So they're not really social. So I've had to break down a lot of barriers sometimes by just, you know, communicating to that person as often as I can, and asking them what method of communication is best for them. Maybe they're not a talker, right? Maybe they prefer email or something like that. Also relationships. So I've been able to be as successful in my career. Relationships. They have given me exposure to information that has allowed me to, you know, advance maybe faster than some of my peers because they didn't have those relationships. And definitely patience is one of the other key skills I'll say I've learned with technology. We so, as society, we have, you know, become so accustomed to instant that, you know, with technology, especially with a network, in my early days, dealing with wanting to be a network engineer, you had to be patient with the network. You had to be patient with technology. So those are definitely some of the top skills that I've gained over the 9 years.
You know, I love that you kind of went directly to behavioral and over functional. And the reason why I say that is, you know, with the change in the landscape for technology, especially with the, I would say, reintroduction of AI, because AI has been around for a while.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at, let's just say, project management AI, right? There's going to be a lot of functionality that's going to be covered by AI. But what's not going to be covered are some of those soft skills, some of those relationship building skills, some, you know, the communication methods. You're going to have automated methods from an AI perspective. But how do you make sure that all the different types of personalities that are on your team are covered? You know, the methods of communication. You know, I remember at certain roles within project management where you're trying to get updates from people, some people are like, okay, I'll send you a status report, or I'll update this tool and you just go and get it, or, you know, call me at this time of the day and we can go over it. And, you know, at a certain point, you're like, you know, you let me know how you want to communicate the status. You can send me a pigeon carrier. If it's going to get the information to me, then I'll take it. So, you know, I love that, you know, that you kind of highlighted those things, because when you have the experience, you have the experience. But it's how do you connect with the teams? You know, how do you get the information out there? How do you connect the dots and make sure that everyone knows what's going on and everyone stays in the pocket?
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, I like that term, Kina. Pigeon carrier. That's a new one.
The pigeon carrier.
Yeah, I never heard of that.
I don't care how you get it to me. You can drop it with a drone nowadays. Just get it to me.
Well, I've been away too long. Dante, you know, I'm retired, right? I've been retired 5 years, I guess. And, you know, getting away from that environment, that, you know, with major players like Deutsche and Bank of New York and, you know, Amro Bank. You know, our background is international. Mine is international bank. Okay. My expertise is money movement and regulatory compliance. That's my niche, you know. So, you know, with AML, OFAC, that's where, you know, those are my strengths. Okay, so I just want to lay that out there. So that, and then Kina is strong project manager on the retail, or the credit card side.
Payment services,
yeah.
Yeah, payment services, the various sides of the credit card side of the house. You have the issuer, the acquirer, merchant services, payment network. I think I've worked for almost everyone, Visa, MasterCard, Discover, but not Visa, MasterCard, Discover, American Express. So, you know, we've kind of been around the block there. And as Walter mentioned, you know, we've worked together, but kind of hopping on the next topic, you know, can you explain the services that OQPS Solution offers and how your agency helps clients align their business objectives with IT strategies?
So that's another really good question. And it's actually, I'm glad that you asked me that, because I've been doing just more learning as a business owner, right? So as people of color, we just kind of jump head first into business, right? Start exchanging services for money and call that a business. That's not really a business. So I've begun to learn, you know, how to really do business. And one of the things that I learned recently is, and I knew this, but we are a B2B service provider, right? We provide OQP primarily, and OQP stands for Only Quality People Solutions. We mainly provide services, like I said, to other businesses. We provide governance, risk and compliance, data privacy protection, security readiness training, as well as ICS and SCADA security. I would best describe how we help our clients. We're able to educate them in a way that empowers them to do their work, that ultimately reduces their overall organization cybersecurity risk to acceptable levels.
Can you expand on when you say reduce their risk to acceptable levels? Let's just say for some of the members of the audience that may not be very familiar with, you know, that, can you just elaborate on that a little bit more?
Sure. So reducing risk to acceptable levels, as a visual, to give you a visual perspective of like what that means, right? Because it can mean you can have managerial technical controls that need to be reduced. But to give you a visual, imagine you have a building that has 20 doors. Reducing your risk to acceptable levels would look like taking 15 of those doors and boarding them up with at least, you know, four by fours that are nailed into the wall. You have a camera system directly on each one of the doors with an alarm. So if the door opens, it sounds, whether it's open from the inside or outside. So that leaves you with five doors that are not boarded up, right? Essentially, what you've done there is you have reduced the risk your overall risk of if something were going to occur, the likelihood of it happening is going to be on these five doors that we don't have extra protections on. And you like to think that those other 15 doors, someone would hear someone banging and kicking and screaming and an alarm going off. So does that make sense to you?
That makes sense to me. Oh, yeah. And then when you look at selecting, right, is there a selection process in determining where the majority of the risk may exist? So you, I guess, determine how best to prioritize which doors per se.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that's when, you know, this is what comes in and separates me and that threat hunter.
Oh yeah, the threat hunter versus the cyber hygienist. Yeah.
Right. I would come in and look at those five doors and say immediately, well, what are the regulations, right? Beginning with probably the city policy or regulation or laws. And then I would look at federal laws, right? What are there any mandates that we have to meet? Okay, we have to have an ingress and egress door. Okay, that takes away two of the doors. That leaves us with three. Okay, how big do the doors have to be? Do we have to have a security guard on the door? Does he have to be an armed security guard? Do you have to have a login sheet? So, you know, before you want to kind of do all that, you want to ask yourself as a business, how valuable is what I'm protecting, right? Because, you know, when you go into protecting an asset, you don't want to spend more money than the asset is worth to protect it. For instance, like if you have a $1 million piece of your business that's worth $1 million, you don't want to spend $3 million protecting it. That wouldn't make sense, right? That wouldn't be able to be justifiable from a business standpoint. Definitely want to start with prioritizing that asset based on its impact levels to your business.
So you guys have more of a proactive approach.
Absolutely. That's why I coach and teach and educate cyber hygiene. It's a new slogan, actually. I'm there to shift your cybersecurity paradigm about cybersecurity and how you manage cybersecurity at your program.
Makes sense.
Okay. Yes, it does. So Dante, you mentioned and you defined what OQPS Solutions offers. Okay. But I want to ask, how do you stay current with the ever evolving landscape of cybersecurity threats and technologies?
I take the same approach to staying current with ever evolving cyber threats. Learning, you just, you know, every day tuning into a podcast, one that I listen to frequently, is called Cybersecurity Today. Okay. They are based out of Canada, but they do report on a lot of U.S. incidents, events, and threats. And I also like the narrator of the show. I think he does a good job of keeping it brief, but also informing listeners of, you know, the threats and vulnerabilities that live out there. I also daily I go to a website called bleepingcomputer.com. They're a reputable source. They've been around for a while. And I tend to read up on the articles that they post because, like I said, that they're relevant. The information that they report on is viable, right? I tell a lot of people, you got to be careful where you get, where you're reading your stuff from as far as your source. There's a lot of propaganda going on, especially with the election coming up. So definitely Bleeping Computer is it's another good resource. To the stay current.
All right. Cybersecurity, something that AI is going to, I mean, you're a cyber hygienist, all right, / threat hunter, all right? I'm just going to group you in there too. What do you think the implications of AI is going to be to your business?
I think Keena mentioned this, is that AI is not new, right? Artificial intelligence has been around for, I think, I read maybe about 20 or 30 years. You know, you think of Siri, you think of Chief, you know, Axe Chiefs early on. Google had Axe Chiefs.
Yeah, Alexa.
These are all examples. Any chatbot service is an example of artificial intelligence in some capacity. I think artificial intelligence, especially for a cybersecurity professional like myself, is going to level the playing field, I think, in a lot of ways. As long as you know scripting languages, and the scripting languages, what a computer is built on, computers run on computer code. And if you're able to read and write in a particular coding language, you can then leverage those skills, what we call scripting, to be able to run software automated. So as you probably know, cyber attacks happen daily, and some industries see, you know, thousands of attacks a day, right? Human fatigue is real. So, you know, being able to leverage artificial intelligence tools such as SOAR, which is a acronym that we use in cybersecurity for a tool set called Security Orchestration and Automated Response, you can actually script that tool to be able to identify certain indicators that may appear to be of malicious nature. All right, so I think AI is going to balance the playing field. We can use it to pick up deep fakes. That's another thing artificial intelligence is going to introduce. It already has. And a deep fake is a artificial intelligent software program that can mimic audio, visual environment to be something that is actually not.
Oh, yeah, I've seen those. Yes.
So AI, if I have AI, it's going to be who has the better AI, right? The bad guy or the good guy?
Yeah, because it's almost like people use AI to create it, but you also need to use AI to beat it.
Exactly.
To protect you.
Exactly. Yes.
Okay, now, this leads me to a couple of things, and I don't want to get off topic per se. But it's very interesting that you will be, you have a speaking engagement in Thailand.
I do. I see you do your due diligence. I like that about you, Walt. I am hosting a cyber hygiene clinic coming up in Thailand, Bangkok, Thailand, at the end of May, actually May 24th.
That's not long, about, yeah.
Yeah, we're about to sign with the space. I've been, you know, contemplating what kind of venue space that I wanted to have it in. So I think we got that narrowed down. But yeah, this is going to be my first cyber hygiene clinic in a international capacity. And I'm excited.
I'm proud of you, Dante. That's really cool. I look at people like you. I know that we're not a loss. You know, I always say, and I've said this, numerous times, right, is that I don't see us surviving another 100 years from now, but with people like you and Lindsay and Jeffrey, and I can go on. Since I've had this podcast, I've met some people that, you know, just really tearing it up. And I, you know, I'm proud of you guys, because I know that, you know, the future is bright with people like yourself, all right? So I digress. But I did want to throw that in there, you know? So, yeah, I'm proud of you, man. That's cool.
Thank you.
Wait, I've got a quick question. What do you mean when you say you don't see us lasting 100 years?
I think we're going to be extinct. Cool. I think I really do. I think we're going to be extinct if we don't turn things around.
Oh, Walt, I'm going to be around. I'll be around. I'll let you know how it goes.
Yeah, please. You know, send me a...
We will be around.
Text me in whatever place, up or down. Just give me a text.
I will text you.
Let me know. All right. But anyway, we're digressing here, Dante, so forgive us. You know, but we try to lighten it up where we can, you know? All right. So anyway, yeah. I mean, I was in Thailand. I did a offsite in Phuket, Thailand. All right. When I was a change manager for ABN AMRO. So we did an offsite in Phuket. I didn't go into Bangkok, but I've been around neighboring countries like Malaysia. I was based in Singapore for like 4 months. So I was in Malaysia, Indonesia. So one thing I can tell you, and I warn you right now, is that it's very hot over there. You're right near the equator, about 20 miles from Bangkok. I know Singapore was 12 miles from the equator.
Yeah, I have. That has been the narrative of everyone that I've told that I'm going that way, is it's really hot.
So. Yeah, man, I didn't like it. I really didn't. I couldn't adjust to it. I couldn't. Even after 4 months, I couldn't wait to leave. But
see, that sounds beautiful to me. I'm the kind of person, I look for the hottest spot on the beach, and wherever it's hot, I'm fine. I have a problem with the cold.
Yeah, me too. But that extreme, that's extreme over there. But you got to go. You know, you'll make it. You get over there. Let me know. But yeah, Dante, that's great, man. And about your book, you did mention that you wrote a book. You got to tell us a little bit about your book, please.
So my book, you know, sometimes people ask me, you know, where did I come up with it, or how did I come up with it? And, you know, I just got to give glory to God, because it definitely didn't start out that way, right? Just, you know, coming out of the pandemic, like a lot of other people, I just had a lot of time to think. It was a time that, you know, allowed me to think, but coming out of it, it allowed me to be intentional, like with the things that I was doing. So one of them was generating passive income, and I have came up with a couple of ways to do that. And then, you know, I started thinking about, you know, what I think Les Brown may have said, that, like, you know, you just, if you go where there's a problem, money will come. So I started looking at the industry I was in and realized that more often times than not, the first time a person gets their first awareness training is at a job if they're lucky. And I thought that didn't make sense, because everyone has smart devices. Some babies have smart devices at, you know, 3-4 years old. They don't know how to talk, but they know how to work the phone. So I, you know, had developed what I called at the time cyber hygiene, and wrote the book just with the intent to increase the everyday user's cyber IQ. That's literally what it started out as. I mean, still is. I'm actually finished with this. No one knows this, so I'm dropping it here on the show, but I actually wrote Cyber Hygiene 2, and I'm just looking for a Black publisher now to help me with that, so that I can publish the book myself, and this time, you know, not use Amazon.
Oh, okay. Hey, that's it. Great. Fantastic. Stay tuned for our next episode, where we will continue with part 2 of our interview with Dante Tyler. Very important, folks. Thank you.